You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
What's this button do?
You are now entering the green world.
Since 1986, the Ministry for the Environment has been the central policy advising entity in New Zealand for environmental issues. The government has recently proposed the Environment Amendment Bill, which seeks to disestablish the Ministry for the Environment, which would be amalgamated into a larger ministry for cities, environment, regions and transport. For Green World this week, I spoke with Professor Nicholas Lewis of the University of Auckland's School for Environment about these proposed changes, how they fit in with the government's current priorities around the environment, and the impact this may have on New Zealand in the short and long term. So the Ministry for the Environment has been around since 1986. Why is it important to have a body and structure dedicated to the environment?
See, what the ministry is able to do is consider over a long period of time, so it's able to build over 30 years now, a body of understandings about the environment, a body of understandings about things that need to be prioritised when decisions are made that involve the environment, a collection of expertise and institutional memory. All of these things add up to an ability to act as a democratic institution and in the functioning of government. The ministry is not set up to be a voice for the environment, but to be a place where matters of the environment are considered independently of other considerations, so that when decisions, overall decisions are made, what is important to the environment is firmly on the table.
And what is the government's reasoning behind removing the Ministry for the Environment?
One can only imagine that it's related to two things, three things maybe. I would say the first is it does away with some of the contention around fast-tracking development processes. So it allows government to have a far more direct control over the development process, which takes away some of the delays associated with approving consents to use resources, delays that on the one hand may be unnecessary red tape, but are generally appropriate delays to consider questions that are important to wider communities and to the environment over a long period of time. So that removal of obstruction to developer and government imperatives is probably the primary reason. The second reason is it allows government to concentrate control over processes and to streamline decisions that come from the centre of government into sort of enacted policy through the spending of money and investment in infrastructure on the government's part, but also to expedite development processes on the part of investors.
Looking to the short term, what sort of effects do you expect to see this ministry is disestablished?
In the short term, I expect to see wherever there is capital available, wherever there is investment money, looking for an outlet in around New Zealand resources. I expect approvals to be expedited. So barriers to the development process. But I don't actually expect to see that result in investment, because I don't think the country is geared up to be able to invest quickly. So what you will probably see fastest is development processes on the outskirts of Auckland, development within Auckland City. You will see some of the government's plans around mining and large-scale infrastructure projects be streamlined. So you'll see plans in place, I think, for investment rather than necessarily investment. But you'll also see a change of developer culture, which is a worrying thing in that the presumption will now be that anything is possible.
Yeah, and how can we expect this move to play out in the long term?
For longer term is more worrying because it may take some significant time to assemble the pools of capital from international financial vehicles or even domestically configured pools of finance to become investment ready. But once that is ready, I think we should expect to see a concentration of investment in farming around the country. I think we should expect to see land that's previously not been brought into full production being brought into production. I think we should expect to see some large scale developments on the edges of our cities. We will see some mining exploration, although it's uncertain how successful that exploration will be in terms of long-term mining operations. I think what we might see now is some more economically marginal mining get the go-ahead. But more significantly than any of those things, I think we'll see ownership of property concentrate into smaller hands, into fewer hands, should I say, with the expectation that development is possible at any moment. So preparation for grow, maybe, rather than immediate growth.
And how do you see the ministry operating under a new combined ministry of cities, environment, regions and transport?
That's the worrying factor. When you do amalgamate ministries, and for that matter, disciplines within universities into mega schools, what you create is the ability for more streamlined control from the centre. That's the general outcome of these things, and that's why they do it in effect to centralize control around claims to do with efficiency. There's little proof that there will be more efficient decision making in terms of final outcomes on the landscape, but there is every evidence suggests that the control will be streamlined. So in the hands of a government that is dedicated to growth, you will see concerns with the environment deprioritized. You will see the other three dimensions of the ministry are essentially growth-oriented dimensions. So you're putting the environment inside of those concerns. So in terms of environmental protection, considerations will be driven very much towards a growth within limits approach to environmental management, and those limits will be pushed upon on a daily basis. I think that's the kind of main concern. We've seen some of this within MBIE, where the science system has lost its independence and has now been very much made subject to the demands of innovation and economic development. So there is precedent in the New Zealand setting and in the New Zealand government setting for these mega ministries to silence to silence voices that would have the world be otherwise. My big concern about all of this is that it's yet another institution and point site moment in the democratic process where alternative views of what this country might look like and how we might generate our livelihoods and how we might produce our, reproduce our social infrastructure. But it's yet another one of those sites and moments that is disappearing on us. So a loss of opportunity for people to participate in their own futures, in the design and execution of their own futures, and a loss of opportunity to float alternative visions of the future into decision-making contexts.
Yeah, what is the public's view on these proposed changes?
Well, it's hard for me to answer that question. Obviously, you've seen, and we've all seen, an outcry from the social media and the people based in universities and CRIs and people involved in NGOs, because this is the latest step in a series of changes associated with fast-tracking, resource consents and so on. And all along the way, there has been a great deal of opposition through those circuits. It's a little bit hard to tell how that opposition, what level of opposition there is out there beyond those who are social media users. There has been a lot of opposition in social media, but what that says about the general mood of the public is difficult to read.
Was this a foreseeable move based on the previous handling of the environment by the government?
I think this was foreseeable. The government is very much concerned to overhaul the reform of the RMA that was already in place. So the Resource Management Act, which is at the heart of much of this, and the teeth that the Ministry of the Environment, believers that the Ministry of the Environment can pull. To the extent that government might be looking to completely overhaul resource management law, yes, it is completely foreseeable. They would need a different entity to do that if they wanted to backseat the environment.
And how does this move make New Zealand look on an international stage?
That's another unfortunate thing. The immaterial that I've read in various sorts of literature, the Ministry for the Environment, the New Zealand Environmental Regulatory Framework more generally, is looked upon as a bit of an exemplar as to how you can build a voice for the environment into routine policy making and decision making. And I think that loss is a significant one. We tend to underestimate the importance of the international view of New Zealand, both in narrow economic terms, in terms of tourism and so on, but also in more general terms of how our young people might get jobs in other parts of the world, how our diplomatic endeavours are seen, and the way in which we've become a significant international actor. All these things, such as our relationship with the environment, our democratic structure, our regulatory arrangements, are all part of those dimensions. And at a time in particular when so many young people are being driven overseas to find employment, this sense of how important our nation is, how well it is seen abroad, is an important part in whether young people get jobs overseas.
That was the University of Auckland's Professor Nicholas Lewis speaking about the government's proposed removal of the Ministry for the Environment.
That was The Green World.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.